2FM. With Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
A massive thank you to our teammate Jenny Green for single-handedly dragging us over the hump of the week. It's Wednesday, the 12th of May, and this is Game On.
Coming up tonight, we're in Manchester as the blue moon shines brightly.
We preview the Camogie National League with Aoife Murray and Sinead Farrell.
57 minutes and 32 seconds played. Kilkenny, 13 points. Galway, 110. Here she comes. It's low and it's in the back of the net. Denise Cole. A rasper that not even Sarah Healy could stop.
And we talked to Sport Ireland Chief Executive John Tracy about Ireland's sporting participation rates and also the likelihood of the Olympic Games going ahead.
Carlos Lopez is coming in to take the gold medal in the Olympic Games of 1984 at Marathon. Now we can concentrate on the battle for second and third. Tracy has come away from spinning as the pictures acclaim Lopez. The crowd are still watching. Down on the track, they're looking at two men, an Irishman and a Briton. They're going for silver, they're going for bronze. John Tracy has 100 metres to go. In the past, Ireland have won bronze medals. John Caldwell, Freddie Gilroy, Sox Byrne, Jim McCourtney Russell. They've won golds. Pat O'Callaghan twice, Bob Tizzle, Ron Delaney. They won silvers with John McNally, Fred Teague, Wilkinson, Wilkinson. And for the 13th time, an Irish medal goes to John Tracy. The crowd stand to the Irishman from Villierstown and Waterford.
What a performance by John Tracy and Jimmy McGee. Brilliant stuff. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Marie, how are we doing? How are things?
Yeah, all good, Donica. It's Wednesday.
Yes. I honestly, Jenny was getting me there with the music earlier on. Just drags you along, doesn't it?
It really does. Yeah,
a bit of a lift. There was a lift around Man City last night.
Well, was there now? Really, was there? There wasn't a lot of people around to celebrate their big win.
There wasn't a whole lot outside the stadium, but I did notice when I was dropping Jake off to school today, there was an awful lot of Man City gear bags, jerseys. Everyone's dusting them down. Marie's success, you know. Everyone likes to be out with the winning team.
I have to say, maybe if I'm to count now, I probably only know two Manchester City fans.
51552. Let's hear you, Man City fans. All two of you, as Marie knows.
Well, look, big credit to them because it was a difficult year. They got off to a poor start. There was a pandemic thrown in. I definitely doubted them at the start of the year, but Pep persevered and he managed to turn it around and they are once again an unstoppable machine. They're good to watch as well. They mix it up, really good squad, some brilliant individual performances, and you have to give him a lot of credit.
Absolutely, and we'll be going through it very shortly with Dominic McGuinness and looking forward to that chat. There's been a lot going on though with an awful lot of other sports. There's a bit of signing going on yesterday. We mentioned that Tadhg Furlong signed a 1-year contract and there's been the fallout of all that. Everyone's interested, what's going on, what's the thinking behind it. But there was good news today for Jack Regan, who had been down in the Otago Highlanders, playing with the Highlanders down there, and he is heading off to the Ospreys next year, which, to be fair, it's great to have him closer to home. It's just when you see openings with Quinn Roo moving out of Connacht, part of me always loves having Irish players in the system, and you wonder, is there an avenue there to get him home as soon as possible? But look, he'll be in the Pro 14, Pro / 16, Pro / Rainbow Cup, or whatever we're going to call it next year.
But Donica, when you think about it, like, he didn't have a contract in Ulster and he went away, and we have spoken so often about the importance of going away. He proved himself at that level and is on the way back. So this might just be part of a process, almost a stopgap for him to get back to Ireland again. But he's turned it around in a big way, and so much credit goes to him, because when he headed over there, it was almost on a wish and a prayer, like hoping things would work out for him. But he's made it happen for himself, and it's amazing.
And Marie, we love that. We love when people back themselves. goals. And that's exactly what he's done. And look, there's a brilliant template from there. If you just look at Tadhg Byrne, the exact same thing happened. He went over to Scarlets. And look, as much as I want players to stay here, I think some players are quite happy to sit in the system and not seek out opportunities. There is younger players. And, you know, I certainly remember I was at that point. If there wasn't probably a change in coaches, if Alan Gaffney didn't come in when he did with Munster, I was definitely gone to Wasps. I remember and having a real clear conversation with him, but he left me no doubt that there was going to be opportunities for me if I was good enough. But if there wasn't a change that time, I definitely would have travelled. And I think there's younger players that are willing to sit there within massive systems as opposed to probably put themselves out and get experience. Because, look, I know it's been a COVID year and we haven't had AIL, but there's very few lads playing ball at the moment. So we probably need a little bit of it. One person that won't be playing any more ball is poor Mike Brown with Harlequins. Incredible career, was suspended today for 6 weeks for stamping, which is quite right. I know the frustration, someone holding on to his boot, he's trying to clear himself, but with everything he's done both for England and Quinns, he'd like to, everyone wants to have the dream send off, but unfortunately for him, he's going to wrap it up sitting in the stands, well, if he's lucky enough to get there.
And deserved, really, Donica, because it looked so bad, and you don't want images like that in the game for anyone to see, so
no. 100%. And look, you do have a duty of care. That's the kind of what's said around the game to make sure. But I'll be honest with you, Marie, it is very frustrating when you're being taken out at rucks with silly stuff like that. And look, I'm the fella that grabs on to guys like Mike Brown.
He's long enough around, Donica, now to know.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's still frustrating, Marie. It really is. It's the small things that always get you, isn't it? And that's definitely one of them. I know we've been looking around, and I saw today that, Ajax?
Ajax.
They have melted down their league trophy so that they can give 42,000 of their supporters championship stars. Imagine that. Imagine getting imagine Limerick getting the Liam McCarthy Cup, melting it down and handing it
all
out.
Well, I'd say there would be 31 other counties, Donica, that wouldn't be too happy about that. But look, it's a great marketing ploy as well, because they're getting worldwide coverage from it as well, on top of keeping all their fans happy and making them feel like their part is something very, very special.
Yeah, very smart. Though. Just kind of giving them, you couldn't be there, so here's a bit of it.
Yeah. I mean, it does tick a lot of boxes. A little bit of news in the League of Ireland as well. So Shamrock Rovers have confirmed the signing of Richie Towell. Fans of the League of Ireland will be so familiar with him because he was an absolute star for Dundalk. And he moved from them back, or he moved over to Brighton in January in 2016. Did some time at Rotherham and Salford, and now he is back with Shamrock Rovers, reportedly on a 3.5-year deal. And he's going to start playing with them on July 1st, so that is going to really strengthen their bid for back-to-back titles. So we will have spoken quite a bit as well about Aaron McAniff leaving, so he will slot right into that midfield there as well, and potentially get the goals that McAniff used to have got before. So a real asset to Shamrock Rovers. Looking forward to seeing him playing, and it's July, so we might have fans back, so might actually be able to go.
Curry chips, you'd love it, wouldn't you, watching the soccer
straight
with the
in
chips.
Bit of sunshine Friday evening. Can't beat it. Donica, you mentioned that Manchester City were crowned Premier League champions, so it was their third title success in the last 4 years. And Dom McGuinness is in Manchester for us. Dom, look, it was a great achievement for the club, although being crowned champions on the back of Manchester United losing to Leicester in the middle of a pandemic does make it difficult to celebrate it.
Yeah, it does. It's a shame, isn't it? And it's not really the way that Manchester City fans would want to win it. I mean, Manchester United losing is something Manchester City fans always like to see, but they would rather have it in circumstances where they can all celebrate properly. But of course, it's the way it is. Liverpool had to contend with it last season as well when they won their first championship in 30 years. So it's just the way it goes. And City fans will console themselves with the fact that they've got the Premier League in the bag, they've got the League Cup in the bag, and of course they've got the Champions League final to look forward to.
Yeah, and they'd have a very happy Pep as well, I'd say, just given the start of the season that he had. And if you throw in the pandemic as well, do you think it's been a tough title for Manchester City to win?
Well, given where they were back in November, kind of more or less mid-table and things not going right and Pep not happy with the style of football that his side were playing in, that, as we know, is so important for him. You know, it's not just about grinding out wins. It's always been about the way that the side play. And the fact that there were so many things that seemed to be going against his side, and then there was the contract talk, whether or not he would stay on beyond this season, and he then ended up signing the new contract. Things fell into place for him. Ruben Diaz, the new signing, he has been the standout player of the season, and that's saying something when Kevin De Bruyne is in your side. But again, what a signing he's been. John Stones came back into the team because Laporte had lost form, and he took his chance, and he again has been brilliant alongside Diaz. Everything kind of clicked, and in the end, Manchester City were far and away the best side in the Premier League. They turned it all around, and in the end, you know, nobody's been close to them.
Dom, it's funny, everyone talks about the attacking and keeping possession, but you mentioned their defence, and you mentioned John Stone and Ruben Diaz, and that's probably the area that has been much improved.
Absolutely it has, and that was the one grey area for Pep and for Manchester City, because they always give teams a chance. So many times over the past few seasons, even when City have been dominant, you know, they've always given teams opportunities to score, and teams have taken those opportunities on many occasions. But City, because of the attacking prowess, they can always score more than you. Now, you know, they did get mean this season. They did start grinding out 1-0, 2-0, and again, it wasn't the style of football, as I alluded to, but they started getting mean in defence, and that is so important if you're going to win titles and you're going to progress in cup competitions. And they managed to do that. So getting the back four right, ahead of the keeper, who has been outstanding really since he joined Manchester City. So Edison's there, then the back four, the two in the middle have been settled really overall this season, Stones and Diaz. It's made a massive difference. It's even made the point that with Pep, he can change his fullbacks, which he likes to do, but you know, Zinchenko and Walker have been more or less the standout players, but whether or not Mendy comes in or whether or not Cancelo comes in, you know, again, it's that centre-back pairing that has been key this season.
Do you think Diaz is the best defender in the world right now?
Well, that's saying something. I'm not sure about that. He's certainly, there's an argument, he's certainly one of the form defenders in the world at the moment. I think he's made an incredible impact for a 23-year-old that came from Portugal and just settled in the way he has. So certainly a standout performer in world football. I'm not sure he's quite the best yet, but you know, if he keeps doing what he's doing, it's all about longevity as well. You know, one season is one thing. If he does it again next season, then that's a certain argument.
Yeah, well, definitely, as you said at the start, when you have De Bruyne in your squad and Diaz has been talked about as the player of the season, it really says something. Another big talking point about this team has been the fact that they played a lot of really big games without a recognised striker, and it worked out really well. How has he managed to make it so successful?
Well, there's a lot of chat about this false nine position, and you know, it's not something I particularly like hearing. You know, all the players that he has in that front three when they're going forward, they're all goal scorers, whether they're coming off the left or the right or in central positions. You know, they're all attacking players. Aguero, who of course has had injury problems, he's come off the bench, and as he did last week, and again, what a player he is. But he is an out-and-out number nine who, again, seems almost surplus to requirements. But it just shows you that, you know, when they have been waiting with goals, the likes of Sterling, the likes of Mahrez, Phil Foden in from a wide position, you know, they've all stepped up. And even players you see like Ilkay Gundogan, who before this season wouldn't really have been seen as one of the first teams on the team sheet. What an important player he's been. 16 goals, again, really driving it. You know, a top scorer from midfield. Incredible. But there's goals throughout the top six in that, the front six in that team. And that's what makes them so special, attacking-wise, that they can play without a recognised number nine. And it doesn't really make any difference. What is interesting, though, is what Manchester City do now. Because are they going to stick with that, or are they going to actually get a recognised number nine, a young attacking striker? Now, I believe they will try and do that, whether or not that is the likes of Haaland, who everyone in the world seems to be after. And is that the kind of play that Pep wants, an out-and-out striker like that? It'd be interesting to see what happens.
Well, Noel Gallagher was given his 2 cents, and he even makes out that he probably should get him involved.
Yeah, well, I think every supporter of every club would agree that they want him in their side. I mean, his goal scoring is phenomenal, and you know, again, at his age, he's perfect for any team to get a hold of. It's what the numbers are going to be like to try and get a hold of him, and you know, there's going to be a bidding war. There are 14 clubs that have expressed an interest. You know, again, it's all in the agent's hands, and the player can pick and choose it. What a strong position he's in, but you know, the best clubs in Europe all want to sign that man.
It'll be interesting, all right, to see where he goes, and it'll be interesting to see if he makes his decision before or after the Champions League final. So just from that point of view, heading into it, how do you expect it to go?
The Champions League final against Chelsea, well, it's such a fabulous tie in many ways. I mean, with the domestic situation and the fact that Chelsea knocked Manchester City out of the FA Cup, they seem to certainly have the beating of them on a big occasion, which makes it very interesting. And I think that it was the worst situation for Manchester City, Chelsea getting through. It makes it fascinating, of course. There's been lots of chat and debate about Istanbul and Wembley and everything else, of course, for two English clubs. But I think Chelsea are the only side in Europe that I think can run Manchester City absolutely close in that final. I would still fancy Manchester City just if you made me kind of choose, because I just think that Pep's on a roll now and everything's gone their way, and I think such is the onus on Champions League success for Manchester City. Thomas Tuchel's only been there 5 minutes. He's done superbly well. But again, Chelsea just could have the Indian sign over Manchester City, which makes it fascinating. It's a really tough one to call.
It really does. And Chelsea are playing Arsenal tonight at 8:15. So interestingly, Dom, like after Manchester City were crowned champions, Premier League champions, a lot of the talk today, even more so than the fact that they were crowned champions, was the fact that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer had made 10 changes for that Leicester game last night.
Well, yeah, you know, I nearly threw my boots in the bag. I mean, it's the way. But the thing is, I mean, Jurgen Klopp has said today that he fully understands that, and he'd have done the same. That's the way it is with the fixtures, the way that they've fallen. Now, there's been a lot of chat, obviously, about, you know, it was Manchester United fans and the protests that caused the postponement of the Liverpool game, and therefore the fixture list now is crazy and all these games in so few days. But, you know, from Jurgen Klopp with his managerial hat on, forget all that. His point was the same as Solskjaer, was the same as any manager. He's going to do what's best for him, and he could care less about the repercussions for other sides. And that is the way it has always been, and you won't get a manager apologising for that. So if Solskjaer feels, well, I'll play the kids against Leicester or the fringe team, whatever you want to call it, and if they get away with it, so be it. But of course, it's Liverpool tomorrow evening. Now, you know, every single Manchester United fan understands that if you're going to play a strong side against Leicester or Liverpool, who do you think it's going to be? It's going to be against Liverpool. Manchester United want to beat Liverpool any day of the week. United fans don't want Liverpool to win a throw-in. So the point is, if they can beat Liverpool, not only can they just edge closer to solidifying second place in the Premier League, which would be some achievement, they can keep Liverpool away from the Champions League spots. So, of course, that's what Solskjaer's going to do. And hot on the heels of playing at the weekend, he was always going to make uniform changes, and that's exactly what he did.
But, Dan, we have to learn from it. I know we chat about player welfare so much, and this was a rescheduled game, but to expect these guys to go out on a Thursday, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, it is an awful lot.
Yeah, exactly. So there'll be 10 changes again, I'm sure, tomorrow. And that's the way it will be. And he'll try and do that. He'll try and muddle his way through the remaining Premier League games and keep everyone as fit as they possibly can be for Villarreal in the Europa League final on May the 26th. That's all Solskjaer's bothered about now, in reality. Second place looks pretty much assured. Again, if he can, you know, just make sure that second place is assured. But again, he's going to try and rotate the squad as much as he can, keep players as fresh as they can. I'm sure they're all in the red zone now, in the sports science terminology of players where they are going to suffer these breakdown injuries. You know, and again, he has these injuries. He's got Harry Maguire now in a protective boot. And, you know, again, it looks hit and miss whether he's going to make that final. So Solskjaer isn't going to care what anyone says about selection. He'll play whoever he wants to get the team ready to finish second if they can, and to win that Europa League if they can. Simple as that.
Did anybody impress you last night? Any of the new players that we got to see a little bit more of, the likes of Anthony Elanga, Amad Diallo?
Yeah. Well, obviously, yeah, Elanga had a hand in the goal. I think it's very tough coming in as well. You know, again, you know, with these circumstances that they are coming in, they're used to playing behind closed doors and the academy games and all the rest of it. Again, it's more interesting to see how these kids operate in front of 76,000 people. So again, when there is nobody there, is it easier for them? Probably is. But I think they both did okay. And I think, you know, again, everybody's used to seeing kids come through at Old Trafford, but they need a run of games before you can assess them. Very hard to just assess them on one appearance, particularly in these strange times that we're living in.
Absolutely. Now, on to more news about Manchester United, but the women's team this time. So Casey Stoney has announced that she is resigning as a Manchester United women's manager. It's quite a curious case, really, Dom. What's behind this?
Well, there's all sorts of speculation that she's been offered a job abroad. The USA seems to be favourite. You know, she's been linked with Arsenal. You know, of course, this is a much decorated player who's coming to Manchester United. And again, you know, with Manchester United getting promoted to the top league, and Casey Stoney was seen as very much the right kind of coach to come in. And what was interesting, though, I remember interviewing her when she came in, and she said that, you know, she'd found everybody at the club in terms of the hierarchy absolutely fully on board with what she wanted to do, what the women's team wanted to do. You know, there was nothing patronising about the setup. they were all treated as equals. But the thing is, it's one thing for that to be said and to feel that at the time. But, you know, the women's team have been training all over the place. They haven't all been under one roof like you get at Manchester City, where the women's team all play and train and live and eat like the first team men's team do, all under the academy roof, if you like. It's not like that at Manchester United. There is Carrington, but they also train at the Cliff, and they train at Lee Sports Village, which is about 12, 13 miles away. So, again, the facilities are not quite the same, and this is part of the reason that obviously we've seen the Manchester United protest. It all goes back again to the Glazers and investment in the training ground, investment in the facilities at Old Trafford and all the rest of it. And this could be linked to that, because obviously the women's team are not training at the best facilities in England. Manchester City's women are training at the best facilities in England.
Yeah, I know that earlier in the season that she had threatened to resign, got a bit of a budget increase, but it does seem like things are not going the way they should be there. And unfortunately, that's the case with quite a lot of clubs. And there are some that are the standard bearers out there, but the rest of them need to catch up. And hopefully, which seems like a big move from Casey Stoney, will force change for the women's team there, because, you know, you need a strong whole club. And then if that can be the case, then you can reap the rewards further down the line. And just before we let you go, Dom, tomorrow, are you expecting protests?
Well, there's been lots of talk about that. I'm sure you've seen images and pictures of walls being erected around the ground at Old Trafford, and, you know, barriers to keep supporters out. And of course, it was the original Manchester United-Liverpool game that was abandoned, postponed because of the protests. There will be more protests in some shape or form. Whether or not it is, again, it's anyone's guess. And I think that the police, of course, now, there's no element of surprise about this. In terms of the team and where they stay and all that, which, of course, they were caught off guard last time. You know, all sorts of security measures have been taken. So I'm sure that the authorities are on top of it. But in terms of the fans' protest, you know, I'm sure there has been some communication, of course, from the Glazers in terms of a letter to the Supporters' Trust, but, you know, not enough. And the fans, you know, they're not just going to take that. There will be more protest, I'm sure. Whether or not that's tomorrow night remains to be seen, but I think the authorities are on top of things. That said, you know, it was pretty organised last time. Who knows if it's going to be that organised again, and whether or not they can get protests and try and what the plan would be.
That's for sure. We'll be monitoring that closely. Dom McGuinness, thanks so much for joining us.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. Donica, it's been a pretty hectic week off the field for the Camogie Association. So we've been following it quite closely, and we're waiting full of anticipation, trying to figure out when the season was when the calendar was going to be confirmed. But now we know after yesterday that it is going to be a split season, and the league will go ahead this weekend. And we are joined on the line now by former Cork player Aoife Murray and Sinead Farrell of the 42. Aoife, to you first. It has been a bit of a wild lead into this, I think, just because people were just trying, they wanted to get back, they were trying to figure it out. There was all these different statements coming out. The players, the inter-county players, definitely wanted one thing. 82% of them wanted the split season in line with their male and ladies football counterparts. Some of the club players were quite vocal about wanting to play in the summer, but who doesn't want to play in the summer? A vote was had, and now the decision has been made. It is going to be a split season. What are your thoughts on this saga?
Look, I suppose it's unfortunate, Marie, that we even have to discuss it, that it was even a topic for discussion. I think we came out quite early with clear communication of what maybe the inter-county players had expected and had wanted for the year ahead, for, as you said, for it to be in line with the GAA and the LGFA, and to give enough time for the clubs to have a proper season at the latter end. And look, thankfully, Camogie did listen, and they paused after maybe making a wrong decision and not communicating it maybe that well either. And as you said, they did go to the clubs. Disappointing, I suppose, that it was a low 60% response from the clubs, because I think, I actually thought it was great to get the engagement from the grassroots and get the club players involved in maybe what HQ are actually doing. But look, thankfully we have it over with now, and I think it was really good to see the players coming together collectively as well, whether that be on the club or the county side, Marie, and coming together clearly and quite forcefully together to get their point across and their voices heard.
Sinead Farrell from the 42 is also with us. Sinead, the intercounty players are definitely happy, but in the last 24 hours or so, some club players have voiced their disappointment on social media. They feel that it's been quite a long time since they got to play and they would like to get going and finish off some of last season's competitions too.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually was seeing a bit of that myself on social media. Like, I suppose, look, if you look at the balance of it, I think option two was the one to go for. I'm not the only person that can't play it, but if I was voting for it, looking at the documents and the information in it, I probably would have gone with that myself as well, because like that, it addresses the dual fixture problems, and we see them, or we have seen them in the past, and they would have maybe affected players at intercounty level, and that would have been, we'll say, a handful of players. But this, if option one, that, you know, split within a split season, intercounty first club, then back to intercounty, if that was to go through, those fixture clashes would have trickled down to possibly club level, and that would have been, I mean, potentially a much bigger problem. But look, at the same time, I can completely see where those club players were coming from. And, you know, almost 50% of clubs did want to pursue with that and explore that option. And you can't really ignore that. Like, 53-47 is by no means an overwhelming majority. And I know you spoke about that with Damien Lawler on the show last night. You can totally see where they're coming from. And just to play devil's advocate perhaps for a second, like, I did look at the consultation document that the Camogie Association sent out last week outlining how the polling process was going to go. They laid out challenges and opportunities that went with the two options. And with option one, you know, they were looking at, like, looking further down the line, if, let's say, if COVID was to get worse and lockdown was maybe to come back in, you'd have a better chance of being able to play intercounty games in those circumstances rather than club games. So that's one point to look at. And they're obviously looking as well at maybe maximising broadcasting and coverage. They're looking at the fact that the Euros are on, the Olympics are on, and trying to maybe put the intercounty game front and centre. So there were pros and cons in this. And I spoke to Johnny Greville from the Cavan Camogie team and Laura Tracy, who played for Cork. And, you know, even they conceded, and they would have been looking obviously for option two as well, but they could see the pros in option one as well. They could see why, if you're a club team and you only have, say, Camogie players, you've no ladies footballers and possibly no intercounty players, option one looks very appealing. You're playing your main games during the summer, possibly going to have a bit of time then at the end of the year if you want to go on a staycation or a bit of holiday time. You can completely see why there'd be an appeal in that. But look, I think option two was the one to go for, and it obviously avoids a huge mess. Like, we were hearing about boycotts and player strikes and teams not playing in matches, and I really think that the teams were going to go through with that. So I think it was probably the best outcome for all. I think just on the club thing, sorry Dominic, yeah, just on the AIB club part, I can totally see where the players are coming from, and I suppose if I was in that latter end of the competition, I'd be questioning why couldn't they run it, for example, maybe, and the National League. It's happened other years where obviously it's Paddy's Day or in around March when the All-Ireland Club Series is finished anyway, and the National League had already kicked off. So I could totally see their frustrations of maybe, you know, could they have squeezed us in some way with regard to running it in tandem with the National League, and maybe let the other teams maybe sort out their panel with trialling and testing players on the intercounty scene. So I can totally see where they're coming from.
Yeah, Aoife, yeah, you can see that it would be frustrating, and it's hard to keep everyone happy. But has this led to, you know, the polling process? No, you mentioned 60% take up. Do people now realise there will be change? So I need to make sure my voice is heard within that.
Yeah, and look, and I'm totally open for correction on this. Is I'm not too sure when else the Camogie Association go out to the grassroots, as in not to delegates but to actual clubs, and have a one vote per club. So I'm totally open for correction that they've done this before or it's been done recently. But look, I think for a lot of clubs, they haven't the experience of maybe running it and maybe registration as well. With COVID, things are a little bit maybe delays. So albeit low, I think it was just great for clubs to maybe get involved in that decision process. And I think you're right, Dunica. Maybe club players and intercounty players are now going, you know what, I do have a voice and I have an opinion, and maybe just put it in the right vessel with regard to getting that heard. So I suppose when a player's voice is put collectively and the communication is clear, change can happen.
Well, the change was a very positive thing, Sinead, and so is the fact that now our female inter-county players are going to receive the same amount of funding as their male counterparts, which was just really brilliant to see. And like, you'll have been there from covering the Women's GPA from when it was founded, and it is phenomenal progress that has been made in such a short space of time.
Yeah, I mean, this is huge. This is brilliant for GA for ladies there. I think it's brilliant
that the ladies footballers have. Sinead, I'm going to call you back because your line is gone a little bit, but I'm going to put that question to Aoife. Aoife, you have definitely been there for so long and will know how hard that the female players had to fight to try and get some parity, but they're there now when it comes to the grants.
Yeah, and look... Yeah, I've been around a few years looking at, I suppose, the progress. And in fairness, it's amazing, even since 2007, since the teen grants, to now coming into a parity of public funding. And, you know, I remember going to the expenses meeting 2 years ago now, or over 2 years. And, you know, we set out a plan at that stage. And to see it come full circle, I think you have to thank the founders of the WGPA and everything that they put in there, even thinking of going down the team grant road. And you know, what a few weeks for the, I suppose, the alliance for the WGPA and the GPA. There's been a lot of tests over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and for this to be highlighted, I think it just shows. And I think Jack Tabor said a really important comment as well, Marie, that, you know, the inequality was so significant, it couldn't be done in piecemeal, and it had to be done in one lump sum. So look, I'm really excited to see maybe what can happen Camogie over the next few years and how they use it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Sinead is back to us. And Sinead, before we move on to the action, we're going to just chat very quickly about the new rules, which have come in, and they're definitely going to be in this season, in this weekend. So they're here to stay. So things like the quick free from the hand, more contact, dropping the hurley is not allowed, and the hand pass goal is no more. So these are all seen as a very significant step in the right direction and will potentially improve the game in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Apologise for my connection there. You can blame my boyfriend's family. I'm living with them out in Bali at the moment.
Brilliant.
No matter. So look, on the rules, it's funny. Whenever I speak to players at press events, like the ones that come up whenever we talk about rules, the dropping of the hurl and the hand pass goal, they're the ones that tend to come up a lot. And they actually probably go a little bit hand in hand, because to hand pass the ball for a goal, Aoife will probably know about more of this than me, but you do tend to have to drop the hurl in order to do it. And like, in this, immediately you're kind of looking at the two players that affect the most. So the backs are obviously delighted that this is coming in, because it's probably very hard to defend those kind of goals, because if in that incident where someone drops the hurl and they hand pass it in and you're trying to defend it, you're holding your hurl, it must be a nightmare to have to defend it. For forwards, it's probably a bit of a setback, because it's an easy way to maybe get a goal. It's a handy way. It is like, obviously it's a like weapon to have if you are a forward. But yeah, that's one that does tend to come up a lot. The drop in the hurl, obviously you can't do that either. Physicality as well is a big thing that has come up a lot when we're talking about rules as well. And now you have this thing where you have minimal contact involved, that you can, in a side-on challenge, you can involve a little bit of minimal contact. Now, what is minimal contact? I'm not very sure. I was actually reading, Linda Mellerick was writing a little bit about this, and she had a funny line in it where she said that you should smile as you challenge your marker, as if that's going to soften the blow a little bit. And the referee might be more sympathetic to you. Like, I mean, I'm not sure what you think, but I don't know why the shoulder challenge isn't in ladies football and Camogie yet. Like, we're still treating these players as if they're not able for it. Like, they're built for this stuff, you know. They do gym programs, they're hard as nails, they're well able for a bit more physicality. But on those rules, yeah, look, they should definitely make a huge improvement to the game.
Aoife, what do you think? Obviously, in all sports, we want rules that make the game better. Do you feel these will?
I think they're a step in the right direction, Dunica. And I think, like, going back to Sinead there about the, you know, the shoulder charge, for example, you know, I'd love to know the science behind why it isn't in the rule book. Because, you know, it's a woman versus a woman. It's not like we're going to be taking a shoulder from a man on the pitch. So I'd love to know the actual science and the physical reasons why it's not allowed in the game. Because, you know, the S&C, the direction that all that is going, is only going in one direction, and the rules actually need to catch up.
But I don't want to be too negative. I do think, Donegal, that these are in the right direction. Listen, God love me, I would have loved if the hand pass goal had been got away with a good 10 years ago. I wouldn't have been on the Sunday game as much picking the ball out of the net, which would have been great. I wouldn't have picked up as many yellow cards if the minimal contact was in. So look, I think those particular routes, and I think you could see it in last year's championship, you know, not having the hand pass goals. You know, you could see even, look, I'm going to take Amy Lee of Cork. The presence that she had coming off the line with the comfort of knowing that the hurley cannot be dropped and the hand pass goal be attempted, you know, it was outstanding. Some of the saves that the goalkeepers made throughout the championship were far better than most other years that I've seen, because I think they could come off their line with so much more confidence, just like their male counterparts. I do think there's a bit more to go, but at least we're on the road to making them better.
That's it. And you know yourself as well, Aoife, that it takes time for change to come in Gaelic games, and often it is baby steps, but you eventually get there. So you would think that the fact that there is more contact, that will essentially evolve to maybe a full shoulder challenge in time. Now, let's move on to the action, because there are three brilliant games, well, hopefully be brilliant games anyway, this weekend. We've been waiting for such a long time and had so much drama as well in between. So let's start, Sinead, with Kilkenny and Dublin. And I guess the glaring point from the Kilkenny team is the fact that there is going to be no Anne Dalton.
Yeah, absolutely. Huge player, huge loss to their team, you know, backbone of their team, huge in their All-Ireland win last year. She's definitely with two All-Ireland All-Stars. She's probably one of the best players of her generation, and a massive loss for them. But they'll also be budding by, they'll also have Katie Power coming back in this year, and she was out last year after breaking her kneecap. She's had an awful run with injuries and was missing obviously when they were in the All-Ireland final, so she'll be a big boost for them. And she's actually going to be speaking at the launch for the National League tomorrow, so we'll actually get a better idea of where she's at with her rehab. Is she back at training yet? Because when I actually spoke to her before the All-Ireland final last year, I think she was 5 weeks post her surgery at that time, so we get a better idea of where she is, whether she'll be back straight away. So there's definitely a bit of movement there in the Kilkenny team at the moment.
And Aoife, you'll have known Anne Dalton very well from years of soldiering as well. Like, how big a loss is she going to be? And I don't even think it's her skills, it's her leadership as well.
Yeah, look, and in fairness, she will leave. She'll leave a great career behind her. She's absolutely outstanding over the years. I always see it, like when I was playing, and I don't think, you know, Anne might be the same. When a big player leaves, it's an opportunity for the players, Marie. And I think, you know, with the likes of Mary O'Connell, Aoife Doyle, Katie Nolan, all these girls really stepped up, I thought, in the final last year. So you'll be hoping that, you know, just because, you know, a leader, I suppose, in the statue of Anne Dalton leaving, that it's an opportunity, I suppose, for other players now to take Kilkenny another direction, which is, you know, can we get back-to-back All-Irelands? You know, you can never replace somebody like Anne, and I don't think you should ever try to replace her. You know, somebody new needs to come along and make their own leadership stamp on the team.
I think Dublin are going to be fascinating. I know that the manager, Adrian O'Sullivan, gets a bit of slack for talking to the media, but I think it's great, and the more that we see, the better. But it will be interesting, Sinead, to see what he can do with this Dublin team, because we saw them a couple of years ago. They had so much potential. They've had a bit of a wobble, but you would think that there's something there.
Yeah, certainly. Like when you go back to when David Herity, the former Kilkenny goalkeeper, was in charge of them, there was huge progress there. You know, that big win over Wexford that got them to the All-Ireland semi-final in the first time, I think, in like 27 years back in 2017. And that was a big step forward. And a team like Dublin needs that kind of year-on-year progress. But unfortunately, since then, they have kind of just gone downhill a little bit. You know, they've had a lot of changes in management. And I think with Adrian coming in, I'm not sure if my math is correct on this, but I think it's four managers in 5 years. So they just need a bit of stability. Like there was obviously last year, the issues with their management team leaving so soon before the championship started, and even before that when Frank Brown was in charge and he was only there for a short time. You know, you need that bit of constancy for a team like Dublin. And, you know, going into the league this year, like, look, it Offaly is in that group as well. And the way that the format is, you know, the top two teams will go through to the semi-finals, and then obviously there'll be runners-up going for quarter-final places. So I think there's a big opportunity there for Dublin to use this and get through to a semi-final. You'd imagine, look, Kilkenny will probably win that league. But I think it's a great opportunity with Adrian there. If they can just stay settled, they could have a very good league campaign.
Yeah, and the more teams you have at that very top level, the better. Well, two that are at that top level, Aoife Ar Cork and Tipperary. So what has Paddy been doing now the last few months with his team?
Look, I won't even try to understand what Paddy's been doing for the last few months. But look, it's a great way to start the league. God, if I was playing, you know, having tipped down the park, what a way to start your year, in particularly with everything that's gone over the past 2 weeks. You know, what a way to start your year off, your competitive year off. And looking at I suppose Paddy's after bringing back in Matthew Toomey, Teddy O'Donovan back into the management team, two great people firstly, so they're going to fit really well in with the players and be great on that side of it. And then obviously Kevin's come back in as head coach, and you know, if there was ever a man that was obsessed with the details of coaching, it's Kev. So look, I can't wait to see what he brings, and in particularly with the new cohort of players coming through. Maybe, you know, they've got quite a lot of success at underage, but look, as they learned last year, underage success doesn't always mean adult success or senior success. So look, I'm really fascinated to see where those people can take those players. They certainly have the talent to do it. And Tip on the other side, you know, they've got all stars in their team, between Karen Kennedy, Mary got one, Anya Slattery got one. So like, you know, they're starting off with an all-star goalkeeper, which I think is a great start for them. So now they've got, you know, a good pillar to build from. And I can't wait to see what they can do. And I hope that now they've got these players stepping up, the likes of Cota Van has a bit more freedom with regard to maybe show people exactly what she can do. I think she still has so much more potential. She's an outstanding player. So I can't wait to see, I suppose, what happens there.
Sinead, we kind of know what Cork are capable of. We know that they can go out and win All-Irelands on their best day. But it will be interesting to see now if Tipperary can push on and get to that top level.
Yeah, this is good. This group two is actually really exciting, because it's Cork, Tip and Waterford there. Like Cork and Tip both All-Ireland semi-finalists, and Waterford as well, a really strong team. That's going to be a very, very competitive group. Like, Tip gave Galway a great run in the All-Ireland semi-final last year. I was down in Port Creeve looking at them. Was really, really impressed. I remember Karen Kennedy especially really stood out to me, and deservedly got her All-Star at the end of it. So they'll be pushing now to begin into that top three, to be in there along the sides of the Cork, the Kilkennys, the Galways. And then Cork, like, first thing going into the league is they've no Jim O'Connor, huge player, no more than Anne Dalton, to be retiring, you know, a 9-time All-Ireland winner, 11 All-Stars, hugely versatile player. We were so used to seeing her playing in the backs, but then, you know, she was able to flip the switch and play in the forwards last year, starting a corner forward and scored a goal in that All-Ireland semi-final against Kilkenny, and pushed them into it. You know, they were 6 points up, I think, after the first 8 minutes, and then look, you know, we all know what happened then. Kilkenny clawed it back and pushed on then to get into the final. But that's going to be, I think that's going to be a really, really good game. Like, I wouldn't be too worried about Cork. You know, they're always thereabouts. Unfortunately, obviously, look, not getting to the final last year, but look, they lost to the eventual finalists. They're still a really, really strong team. I think Tip are coming along as well, and that group, I think, is going to be really, really competitive.
And Aoife, what about Galway and Clare? Look, Clare, we know, are making progress. There seems to be quite a bit of momentum behind them. But coming up against Galway in that first game is going to be a difficult ask.
It is, but it's a great way to start as well, I think, Marie, for Clare. You know, they ended the year quite well, obviously, last year. And because it was late in the year, they, you know, it's at least you're starting straight back into the league against Galway, the finalists last year. So I think it's a great place for Clare to start. I think it'll test them. I thought they had a great year last year. I think they possibly just ran out a bit of steam. So I think if they've worked on that, they've worked on their fitness, then, you know, they should have a great crack off of Galway. But look, you know, obviously Galway is one of the top teams, and I think no doubt they'll be absolutely chomping at the bit to get back out there. And not to make up for last year, because you can't ever go backwards, but certainly to maybe banish those memories and just drive on for 2021.
That's it, Sinead. You'd expect nothing less from Galway, really, to come out all guns blazing and attack the season.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I'd say if they could have played the game the following week after losing the All-Ireland final, they absolutely would. You know, they just obviously left it behind that day in a really, really tight game against Kilkenny. This is a great, great opportunity for them to just, like you said, hit the ground running and try and just kind of move past last year. And Clare, you know, they definitely bring a big challenge to them. Like, I know if you look at last year's game against Cork. Look, they obviously, it looks on the in the numbers and the scoreline, looks like they lost by a lot, but the first couple of lines, if you look at the match reports, it ignore the scoreline. They were only 5 points down, I think, with about 9 minutes to go. Again, no more than Tipperary. They're a team that's building and trying to get through, you know, into that top, that upper tier in the Camogie competition. Again, there's a big opportunity for them to reach semi-finals this year. They're in a group there with Galway and Limerick. I think you'll assume that Galway, with the quality they have, that they would probably win that group. Like, I know Sarah Durbin was speaking to the media there quite recently, and they have more or less full house going into 2021. I think Siobhan Cohen is about the only team that's that has the only player that's stepped away in retirement. So they're obviously all players there are all guns blazing, and they'll definitely bring a huge threat to the league this year.
Well, Sinead and Aoife, thanks so much for joining us. I have to say, it's good to be back.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. A new report by Sport Ireland has shown a rise in the overall levels of physical activity among adults during COVID-19 restrictions. However, the report also found a decrease in organised sport participation. John Tracy, CEO of Sport Ireland, is with us now to talk us through the findings. John, just your reaction to what this report showed.
Well, it's there's no surprise in this, really. You know, when sport is shut down, I suppose we're seeing the consequences in terms of some of the numbers. But we're delighted to say that the walking has continued at a very high level, even through the winter months there in January, February, March, when it was cold. And those numbers stood up around 76%. And we're delighted to say as well, obviously the women outshone the men in that respect as well. So that was very encouraging. Some of the sports that really kind of suffered, not surprising, are swimming, because swimming pools are being closed. But we know that they got back out into the open water, and there was a lot of that done, and that's encouraging. Personal exercise, gyms would have been closed, and that would have had an impact on that. And running numbers have stayed up, slightly down, and cycling is down a little bit, but it's up from the 2019 figure pre-COVID. So hopefully everyone will get back into activities now that sport is opening up and the fine weather is arriving and the clubs are opening up and games will start. And that's an opportunity for everyone to rejoin their clubs. And obviously that's what we would strongly advocate to do. And really, really important that everyone gets back into it. Children particularly, I'm sure they're all browned off of walking with the parents. And it was nice to see that type of activity out there. But we're delighted to see the numbers are coming back into the clubs as well. That's really, really encouraging.
Yes.
So, look, there's a number of things there that obviously would concern us. That, like those that said that had given up the sport, said 89% said they'd get back into it. But there is that fearful factor out there in terms of getting out in terms of engaging in physical activity and sport as well, and that's at 48% have expressed that around personal exercise and the contact sports. But obviously, we need to make sure that we encourage as many people to get out there as possible, and older people as well. Obviously, older people need to be involved in physical activity. And the more they're involved in physical activity, obviously, the stronger they are. And, you definitely set your immune system up well to fight off anything that comes in contact with, including COVID as well. And there's been some research done in Britain and the USA that kind of verifies that people that are physically active have a better shout and chance if they do get COVID in terms of fighting it off.
Absolutely, and we'd encourage everyone to get out and hopefully they can keep the good habits going, John. But do we prioritise the areas now that have been a little bit left behind? Like you mentioned swimming there, sports like basketball. Do they need our support more now because they're going to lose maybe a generation of players?
Well, let's put it this way. Obviously, when swimming is affected, because obviously indoor sport and basketball as well have been badly affected because indoor sport isn't back yet. So we're we're at the moment on outdoor sports. As you know, last year a resilience fund was put in place by government, and basketball and swimming and all those organisations avail of that funding. There was a swimming pool fund put in place as well, and $3 million was given out to swimming pools around the country. So it's a small way in terms of I suppose offsetting that cost that there were in terms of not having any classes and things like that. So look, it's just obviously more support is needed to the sector going forward. And look, I'd be reasonably optimistic now that with the vaccinations rolling out, and the numbers falling, that we can get back into sport, we can get back into getting people into matches again. Wouldn't that be nice during the summer months, and seeing more outdoor sport in the first instance, but at the same time, not neglecting the indoor sport, because obviously that's critically important, particularly once the summer months are out. And hopefully in September we'd like to see some progress in terms of the indoor sport, but let's see how the numbers are at that stage. We'll obviously be listening to the public health advice and following that, and offering the guidance to the NGB sector as part of that.
You'd hope as well, John, or you'd expect that because it was taken away from us, that people appreciate it a little bit more and might not be as inclined to pack it in. They might stick with it a little bit longer.
Yeah, you know what, we all missed it, and however activity we were involved with, some of us had the pleasure of doing a bit of running and cycling, but a lot of people missed their golf and missed their sport, and it was nice to see a lot of happy golfers back out and during the last week or so. But we do really do appreciate it when we're back in our clubs and back in with our community and doing things together and kicking a ball around. And that is kind of, as we would describe it, as living again, you know. And really, I suppose, again, the message for the older people that have been cocooned and have their vaccinations, get back out there and start meeting people and get back into their activity, whether walking in their community or whatever they do. But really, it is about appreciating what we can do. And I think also is appreciating the good work the national governing bodies do and the local sports partnership do around the country, offering plenty of choice out there. So what I always say to people is that there is a sport for everyone, irrespective of abilities or disabilities, and something that is to your liking, and it is in your community. So, you know, you can find it through our local sports partnership, or find a club that suits you. And it was obviously great to see walking take off, and lots of people enjoying the outdoors as well. Obviously, critical piece, and I suppose the message around that is to the outdoors, when you're doing it, make sure you leave it the way you found it, and meaning take your litter home, and that's the kind of a message that we're delivering as well. But it's great to see so many people out exercising. We have a couple of forests where I live, and there's loads of people up there exercising every day and walking with families, and that's fabulous to see.
John, as sports fans, we do have one eye on the Olympic Games, and there have been a few developments over the last couple of days. Thomas Bach's planned trip to Japan was cancelled. The American track and field team were going to go there for a training camp. That's been cancelled as well.
Yeah.
We know that there's a lot of people in Japan that don't want the Games to go ahead. They're still in a state of emergency. They've got a really low rate of vaccination over there, but still today even the IOC committee have said that they're fully concentrated on delivering the Games in Tokyo this summer. How confident are you that these Games are going to go ahead?
I'd be very confident they'll go ahead, and if that's the message coming from the IOC and from Japan at the moment, that's what we have to believe in. And obviously the message to the athletes is stay focused. That's the only game in town, and we know athletes are very resilient, and they plan very, very well, and that's what they need to do. We know that preparing and some of the competitions leading into the games have been very disruptive to them, and they've had a very disruptive year But, you know, they keep focused, and they have been focused and getting on with the business and training to their best of their ability. So keep focused on the, on that. But it was great news last week to see Pfizer and the IOC putting a deal together to vaccinate our athletes. And that was very, very welcome news. And it is a relief for our athletes, particularly that are traveling. You know, athletes are warriors. And, you know, it's one less thing to worry about. At least you have taken the highest precaution you can take for COVID, and that'll be great. And well done to everyone that made that happen. It's fabulous that it is happening.
That's for sure. We'll be watching that space. And just earlier this week, John, it was announced that female Gaelic players are going to receive the same amount of funding as their male counterparts. And this was met with a huge amount of positivity. But now we're in a situation where 2/3 of all government grants are going to GAA county players, male or female. How does that sit with you?
Well, okay. I think you're talking about comparing the Gaelic scheme with our carding scheme. There are two different schemes totally. The Gaelic players scheme is about recognising the contribution that Gaelic Games makes to the country in terms of our social well-being, in terms of obviously watching it, but economic well-being as well, and I suppose an acknowledgement of the huge work they do in terms of training during the course of the year, and that it's an acknowledgement of that. And obviously equalisation in terms of the women and men's it's very welcome news, and so that's very good news. But if you're comparing it to the carding scheme, is based on obviously high performance international criteria based on achievements, and it's a totally different scheme. While the Gaelic scheme, the I suppose the highest level of funding to any player is just over €2,000. The carding scheme, based on being world class, is €40,000. So it is totally and utterly two different schemes. So so it's very hard to compare those.
It is, John. But Kieran Shannon pointed out in his column this week that John Travers, who's a 9-time national champion and record national indoor 3-kilometer holder, he doesn't qualify for a cent, which just seems a little bit unfair.
Yeah, look, I won't talk about any individual athlete, right? But obviously the carding is done by Athletics Ireland, and but we provide a substantial amount of money to Athletics Ireland, and the criteria I have is based on world class performances that they have to deliver, right? But as well, AAI do have funding.
John, I'm really sorry, but I'm afraid we're going to have to go. We're out of time, but we will pick up this conversation again soon. Tara Stewart is up next.
2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets, available in selected stores nationwide. 2